Do you want to reduce stress and get better sleep? I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman with exciting news about an effective non-drug solution. The Zen by Nuvana. It's a safe, easy way to reduce stress and anxiety, improve your mood, sleep, and focus naturally. Zen is state-of-the-art. It connects to patented earbuds and uses your music to safely and conveniently deliver electronic signals that stimulate your vagus nerve, a major communication pathway between the brain and most major organs. The Nuvana app links Zen to your mobile device using Bluetooth so you can easily control and customize your experience. Choose from a variety of signal patterns to find what works best for you. Zen is safe, easy, and effective. And for a limited time, get 20% off the exclusive Intelligent Medicine Bundle. For more information and to order, go to NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. That's Nuvana, N-E-U-V-A-N-A. NuvanaLife.com/Hoffman. Stress less. Focus more. Sleep better. Electronically. The Zen by Nuvana. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A wherein you can answer or you can pose your questions. We're doing the answering. Send your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com. That's radioprogram@AOL.com. And we will use those questions as grist for the mill on a future broadcast. Today with me is the eponymous Layla. That's a word which means that the when something is named after after somebody's name, then it becomes, this broadcast is eponymous. It's kind of an obscure, you know, 50-cent word. And that's why we call it Q&A with Layla, because Layla is our nutritionist in residence. And this is the only broadcast in which I partner with her on a weekly basis.
How are you doing, Dr. Hoffman?
Very well, thank you. But I must confess I have a new addiction.
Oh!
Yeah.
Do tell.
Coconut yogurt. I discovered coconut yogurt. Yeah. Now, we've been recommending it to patients.
Yes, yes.
And particularly patients who are on the specific carbohydrate diet.
Right.
Who are allergic to dairy, because they can have dairy on the specific carbohydrate diet, but some people are allergic to dairy.
They do better without.
But so what's your feeling about coconut yogurt?
I've never tried it. Oh. I will confess. I've never tried it. I've only heard about it. I've heard great things about coconut yogurt, but then I heard that they were using too much sweetener. But then there was another.
Right. Yeah. So here's the thing. You know, I go there and there's a lot of choices. And actually, I sample different ones. And the vanilla coconut yogurt is to die for.
Oh.
But it also has 17 grams of carbohydrates.
Right, okay.
Because they put sugar in it.
Sure.
But just like regular yogurt, you can get plain coconut yogurt. It only has 1 gram of carbohydrates.
Oh, the good.
So it's caloric because you get a lot of, it's very creamy.
Yes.
And it's like coconut cream. But it has a yogurty flavor. Do you think they have, it has live cultures? Do you think cultures are viable?
Well, what did it say
viable?
On the label? Well, it should be. I don't see why it wouldn't.
Yeah, that it
you can make kefir from various things, including water, and you still have cultures.
So I have a big container of it sitting in the refrigerator.
Terrific.
That's
a nice treat.
It's a little treat after dinner tonight. And so it's a good way, it's something to put on fruit.
Yeah.
And if you're afraid of the glycemic index of the fruit, that the fruit might spike your blood sugar, there's a lot of fat.
Right.
And probably not much protein in that, right?
It's probably more fat than protein for coconut.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
but it's all good fat. Lauric acid,
like a sheep's milk or something like one of the high protein fatty milks if you're tolerant to dairy.
If the plain yogurt is similar to a regular cow's milk plain yogurt, you can also flavor it. You can make it savory. Like, for instance, if you're roasting any vegetables like zucchini or eggplant or squash, you take that yogurt and you crush some garlic.
This is like Middle Eastern style.
They use like a djajik or a zazuki in Greek or something. And you grate some cucumber and some garlic, definitely a little salt and pepper. Some put mint in there.
Okay.
Definitely dill.
Okay.
And you use it as a sauce.
Uh-huh.
On roasted vegetables. Or
especially offset the spiciness of a spicy food.
Oh, yeah, that too.
It's sort of a,
you could use it as a, like in an Indian curry, if it's a very
antidote,
hot
to antidote
curry,
that, yeah.
You could use that, like, for instance, in a lamb sag or something, or a vindaloo. Yeah.
We're really riffing here.
Yeah. You use a yogurt sauce to, like, put out the fire a little bit.
Okay.
And it's delicious. It's a beautiful contrast to it.
So,
the tang of it is
very,
what
I'm seeing
nice.
Is that there's a lot of... now it's breaking through. It used to be very hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's, you know,
it's
even in
common.
My local specialty market, not just a health food. Health food stores definitely have it.
Mm-hmm.
Whole Foods, you know, pretty definitely.
Yeah.
There's a store by us called Wild by Nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which is...
I've been. Right.
Yeah, which has a good selection of those things. But, you know, that I think is a viable alternative for people who have problems with dairy.
Sure.
And I find it quite tasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I might do is I might mix it with some fruit. I might hit it with a little bit of... one of our colleagues, I did an interview with him, and he said, thanks for doing the interview. Mm-hmm. I have a special treat for you. He says, I tap my own maple trees up in Wisconsin. He has he has like a big, like acres and acres of property. He has his own maple trees, and he taps his own, and he makes his own maple syrup. And this is such a wonderful personalized gift. Sent me a maple syrup, which I has
drizzle
sort of
that on the yogurt a little bit.
Which I, you know, I don't eat sugar, so it's just like sort of sitting there, like I don't eat pancakes, I don't eat waffles, but you know, put a little bit goes a long way.
Sure.
You know,
you
like
could enjoy anything from time to time.
Yeah.
Like that. Sure.
So I might indulge.
Yeah.
I'm not.
What a nice gift.
Yep.
Wow.
So. All right, so let's take questions. Radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. What do we have on the roster for today?
We have a very interesting email from Jill. Jill writes, greetings. Thank you for all that you do. I've listened for years. Tell me how you would eat if you were an ethical vegetarian.
Okay. It's a little bit like saying, What body part would you favor if you were a cannibal?
Thank you.
It's a little hard to get my
head around.
Get my head around. But look, frankly, I can get my head around it because I was a vegan vegetarian.
Yeah, you were macrobiotic.
From about the age of, I think it must have been about 26 to about 30 and change, for many years.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was a vegan vegetarian. Vegan, no dairy, no eggs, no fish.
Right.
No animal products of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
I think I snuck some bonito flakes into making a broth or a miso soup. But mostly I was having seaweed, brown rice, beans, tofu, tempeh. And in those days, it was a challenge because while they had ready-made tofu, they did not have ready-made tempeh. So I had to make my own tempeh.
Oh, my.
Which I incubated in the oven, you know, at the right temperature. I used a light bulb
like
in the oven.
Making your own yogurt. You put the piano lamp in the oven.
Like,
right.
You know, get a 150-watt bulb and without turning it, the oven was just the incubator because the heat was imparted by the light bulb.
Yes.
So, you know, with a starter and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Then there was seitan, so you could eat seitan. But what seitan is...
A lot of gluten.
It's pure wheat gluten.
Yeah.
So I was like cramming this gluten down, you know, because seitan has a little bit the meat-like consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was the...
It's like a hydrolyzed vegetable.
There
protein,
was like faux duck, which was like...
Tofurkey.
I had tofurkey on some So what would we eat? Well, we would eat, you know, rice and beans and tofu.
Sure.
And, you know, the aforementioned coconut is a good source of fat.
Sure.
Because what I missed a lot is I missed fats on that diet. So for satiety, I would eat a lot of nuts and have nut butters just to merely impart satiety. So, and maybe also to offset the craving for carbs.
Yeah.
Because when you're eating so little...
When you're eating enough beans and rice, you're craving more... Beans and
craving
rice.
Desserts like
if you're
crazy.
Eating pasta, you're craving pasta.
Right.
If you're eating breads, Mm-hmm. You know, even your super organic sprouted grain, whatever. Yeah, you're still craving all of that stuff right. as well.
But, so, yeah.
Ethical vegetarian. I wouldn't, I mean, you know,
These days it's a lot easier. I think there are a lot of products that one can use.
I would say here's how to be a better meat eater. Don't buy your commercial meat, the factory farm stuff. Don't get that. Go to your local farmer. Always buy grass-fed. Always buy organic. This is the way to eat well.
But this person's going to be an ethical vegetarian. She's not going to go for that.
I know.
She's not going to go for that. So mm-hmm. But, you know, maybe consider being an ovo-pesco.
Yeah.
You know, where you can have a little bit of fish.
She says vegetarian, not vegan. So that's still helpful.
So then, you know,
eat some eggs. Eat some organic eggs. Eat some fish. Be a pesky vegetarian.
And if you tolerate dairy, that's not a bad way to go.
Really as far as anybody needs to go.
Okay.
Well, wants to be primarily vegetarian.
Let me pose this to you. Mm-hmm. And we've seen this. Mm-hmm. People who need to be on a low-carb diet, but they're ethical vegans, what do you tell them to eat?
Well, I explain to them why, for example, their blood sugar numbers, their A1C, maybe their triglycerides, things of that nature, or any inflammatory markers, why they may not be where they should be. Mm-hmm. And it's a function of how they're eating.
Too much starch, too much carbohydrates.
Exactly.
So, for example, today we saw, this is a real success story. And, I actually had forgotten because I've been seeing this guy for so many years.
Yeah.
When he came to me, I looked at his blood test and he said, your blood sugar is really good. It's your hemoglobin A1C is 5.5, which is great.
Fantastic.
He says, but you don't remember where I came from. And I go, well, you know, you've had so many charts, I don't even have your, it's like we had to make a new chart because it was so fat.
Right.
So I go back and I go, it was higher. It was 11 when he first came in.
Mm-hmm.
And so he is really a devotee of the low-carb diet. But coming back to this theme of being vegan and low-carb, is that an oxymoron?
Being vegan and low-carb, yes. Being vegetarian, if you could give yourself a little leeway, be pesce ovo like that, that could be doable. But it will bring forth boredom very quickly. Because how much fish can you eat? How many eggs can you eat? You're going to get bored. You want something different.
No, but if they're not even having that, what do
if
they
If they're not they even eat? Having that,
just
it's
like
tough.
Just like beans and tofu and...
Yeah, well, that's going to get boring really quick. And then I'd be afraid of nutritional deficiencies. Anybody who's a vegan that way, we've got to watch their B12 levels. We've got to look at calcium levels, iron, carnitine, even CoQ10.
I'm just thinking
things like that.
How do you get the macronutrient levels right? Because let's say ideally on a low carb diet, you're going maybe 10 or 20, and then the remaining 40, the remaining 80%. Is going to be protein and fat.
Yeah.
So that would have to be a substantial amount of fat, maybe 25, 30%.
Beans and guacamole.
Avocados.
And guacamole. Exactly.
Something
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you can't, I mean, you technically can't have ghee. You can't have oils.
No.
You can have a lot of nuts.
Yeah.
Will nuts do the trick?
Sure, it can. Nuts can do the trick.
Eat with a spoon out of the...
Right.
Jar, the peanut butter jar?
Or something like that. Uh-huh. But that will get boring quick. So it's a matter of how I'm able to communicate why these numbers are where they are, what needs to change, and how they can get that trending in the right direction. It ultimately comes down to, is it going to be about you being an ethical vegetarian for that, because or you don't want to eat anything with a face?
Right.
Or is it about your own health?
Right.
And why did you come to us if it's not about your own health? So I'm not here to twist your arm. I'm here to explain.
Yes. So that
to
you
educate.
Could, I mean, so bottom line, you could explain that it's going to be more challenging.
Yeah.
You could pull it off, but it's a little bit like a contortion.
Exactly. Yeah. And we will go through, say, a week's menu and make the best substitutions possible.
Mm-hmm.
My worst patient might be somebody who is vegetarian, vegan, but also very finicky. Oh, I hate tempeh. I can't eat. I don't like it. Well, we've got nothing left. Now you're on a pizza and french fries diet. There's nothing left to eat.
You're painting yourself into a corner.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. And now what about all these like meat substitutes like the Impossible Burger?
Ooh, I don't like many of those ingredients.
Okay.
And it's a lot of carbs too.
It is a highly refined product.
It's like when I see people, you know, drinking different milks, oat milk. Why is there gel and gum in there? Why is there other stuff
to give
in
it
there?
Consistency?
I'd rather you not drink oat milk. Don't drink any milk.
Yeah, there's this thing
just
called
Oatly.
Oatly.
Yeah,
very popular.
Yeah. I don't want people getting those kind of ingredients if that's something they should. You know, gel and gum is only a little bit better than carrageenan. That's really what gel and gum has been used to replace, is carrageenan, which
has
been problematic.
Which has a bad name, right?
Yeah. You know, promoting inflammation in the GI tract.
Right.
So, gel and gum is a little better, but why do you want to ingest this stuff?
It's like the Shoals foot pad commercial. I'm gelling.
Right.
But instead, you're eating that stuff.
Yeah. So how to be an ethical vegetarian? You know, source your food wisely. Don't go too far over in carbohydrate. It will take a lot of discipline to do it correctly.
Now some people do it, and they're they're very active, so they burn calories, or they don't have a tendency towards metabolic syndrome. They can do okay.
Right.
If
they're regularly running 6 miles every other day or something and working out, otherwise they can. It also depends on age. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to worry about somebody who's... Right. When you're older, when you're past the age of 40, the RDA for protein does go up.
Right.
I just wrote about that recently.
So digestive strength is reduced. I don't know if I could eat as much. I was having so much grain, whole grain, you know, bulgur wheat and whole grain oatmeal.
It's a lot
and stuff
of fermentation.
Like that. And it was very... I mean, I think I might have more trouble breaking that down.
Sure.
You know,
Yeah.
That's why, you know, ruminants have five stomachs.
Exactly.
You know, you can give like just a pail of oats to a horse and crunch, and they'll just like chomp
down.
Give
them all the carrots and apples and everything. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. So how else to be an ethical vegetarian? I'll tell you an anecdote of somebody I know whose friend is an ethical vegetarian, eats inordinate amounts of cheese.
Cheese is a filler, and
I'm afraid of all that dairy.
Right.
Come on, that's a lot of insulin-like growth factor.
Right, hormonal.
That's a lot
effects,
of hormonal stuff.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Also, if it's not organic, it's going to be a Trojan horse for a lot of environmental chemicals.
Right. And this is somebody who eats out a lot.
Yeah.
You can't take them to a steakhouse.
Yeah.
You can't take them to...
You know, what will happen is if they're eating a lot of carbs and they're having a lot of cheese, it's kind of a double whammy because it's that combination that puts the pounds on.
Sure. Cheese is very calorically dense.
I mean, you can lose weight on a very low fat diet.
Mm-hmm.
You have like, if you like set your goal to be like, you know, 10% or less calories of body fat, you will be like Dean Ornish's patients.
Right.
You won't necessarily be happy. You'll be
hungry.
You'll be hungry.
You'll be hangry.
Right. But,
you'll be irritable.
But you probably, because of that restriction, but if you eat a lot of carbs, and have a lot of cheese.
Yeah.
Then...
You'll get fat.
It's like mac and cheese.
Right. Because the carb, you know, the carbs are in all the... will cause fat storage. But all the calories from the cheese, you're going into the caloric stratosphere.
Will make the body feel like the carbs...
An ounce of cheese, full fat, is like 110, 120 calories, depending on the type of cheese.
Right.
Some it's only 99, you know, 100, but... Still.
I have to admit, you know, cheese is sneaking its way back into my diet.
It's a nice
and I use
little
it as
grated
a,
Parmesan
I use
here
it
and there
as
is nice.
As a condiment.
Yeah.
I make a beet salad with lots of, you know, arugula and or whatever green I have. And then maybe chop some endives in there and then put some cooked beets in there. And chop some walnuts and put it on there and maybe put some onion slices in there.
Mm.
And maybe a little sprinkle of crumbled goat cheese.
There you go. Goat cheese is nice.
But it's more of a condiment rather than a big slab of it, you know.
Yeah. Look, we grew our own basil, among other things. And, of course, we went a little nuts with, besides tomato and basil, a little mozzarella, not so much, but with the thinly sliced red onion, the nice red wine vinegar. But we made pesto.
Oh, that's lovely.
Need a little parm in there.
Put a little parm
Parmesan
for
cheese,
sure,
with the pine nuts and the garlic.
Because you don't want all that basil, you don't want it to go to waste.
So exactly.
So now you have it stored up. And it's it'll be like a real benediction in January when, right?
Right.
Your own.
From some pesto or something. Exactly.
Good stuff.
So, yeah. A tall order. We're seeing more and more people leaning towards being ethical vegetarians. I know there's a whole movement on, and all with the climate change stuff. You know, it's not just about the cow farts. It's not. It comes from underneath the ocean. All that methane.
The methane,
it's coming
right.
from volcano.
Right.
It's coming from VOG.
Right.
It's coming from so many other things.
There's
it's
an interesting thing about that is that we have, I mean, boy, we're really doing stream of consciousness today. But I've got this product here, which I interviewed the originator on. It's called Atrantil.
Yeah.
And Atrantil is for IBS.
Mm-hmm.
It reduces bloating, gas, blah, blah, blah. And how it was developed is that the farmers noticed that when this is a South American herb called quebracho, which is another name for it is heartwood, is when the animals grazed on it, they were less gassy.
Ah.
So there may be a way to mitigate or ameliorate the methane problem, which is actually more cow burps than cow farts.
Oh, there we go.
It's they irritate, they burp the methane, you know, through their, because they have multiple stomachs. But when they have less gas and bloating and fermentation.
Right.
So this product is that they formulated has got some other ingredients. It's got horse, chestnut, and peppermint, which are also good for digestion.
Peppermint is great for the bloating and gas.
It's called Atrantil.
Atrantil.
But, and then there's some other evidence that, you know, just by altering the feed, I mean, if you, just like with humans, if you feed grains, lots of grains to animals, just like humans, they'll get gassy, you know.
Sure.
They'll develop SIBO. So on the low FODMAP diet, we don't give people a lot of grains.
Exactly. I mean, we burp too, right? We pass gas too.
Right.
Here's the other thing.
Or experience that you know, abdominal distension, you know.
Yeah. Here's another conundrum for those who are really leaning towards veganism and everything. Well, let's look at the soil. What nourishes the soil? Blood and bone meal. How are you going to reconcile that?
Right.
How are you going to reconcile that?
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the selenium and all those minerals, where do you think that's coming from?
Mm.
So the animals die, they decompose into the soil.
Right.
The soil is renewed.
Right.
This is the cycle, of life.
Well, frankly, I mean, how do you get manure except from humans, you know, other than having livestock?
Right. Exactly.
The manure is the fertilizer.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, in these in the agricultural economy of these Neolithic tribes, you know, which is Paleolithic is before agriculture, Neolithic is early agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
They had the animals and they had the crops, and the animals and the crops coexisted. And then, you know, I think the Native Americans are an example of that, is that they had, you know, livestock management. They had, you know, wild livestock, but they used the buffalo dung.
Yeah.
You know, and they had domesticated wild livestock to some extent. And they also had rudimentary crops, most of them.
Yes.
You know, although some of the Native Americans were nomadic.
Yeah.
You know, and they did not stay in one place and cultivate. But they, you know, there's a very nice ecological way that they dealt with it. They also burned forests. They burned forests. They cleared forests. They did forestry management.
Yeah.
So they didn't live in just some pristine overgrown thing like what's burning up in California.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right,
that's said to be due for not very good management
of poor forestry management. Yeah.
So
anyway.
That really tells a story.
So we should all go back to nature.
We should all go back to nature, yeah. We should all hunt and gather and burn forests, no. We should all hunt and gather and cook our food and eat the stuff in the wild. I got to tell you, Dr. Hoffman, this summer I really got spoiled going out into the garden and picking my tomatoes and
That's great.
My peppers and my scallions, even the green of the scallion is so much sweeter than the very kind of, you know, how you get into the green of that spring onion, it could get very kind of harsh. I love that kind of stuff. But it was just, it's just delicious. And the beautiful radishes we had.
I could see that you're not becoming disillusioned with the field of nutrition. You're sort of like more and more.
And we just brought home a big, you know, all the rest of our tomatoes and the pepper. We've got beets now coming in.
Whoa.
So, yeah. My husband loves beets. So, no, it's good. Beets are good for detox, too. Very liver detoxifying.
My garden exploits were a little less ambitious. We got the herb garden growing.
Lovely. But, the herbs are great, right?
You know, like a lot of people during, COVID-19 lockdown, it's like ambitious efforts to grow tomatoes and squash yielded not that much. There's been some articles about, my $500 tomatoes, you bought the fertilizer and the trellis and the it was like, and then it's like, this little tomato,
We grew.
But that's like urban novices.
Mm. We had, at one point, we had so much zucchini and Kirby cucumbers that we had to give them away, which we
right.
did.
That's
to
what happens. Like, they all come in a rush. Yeah. Right. I know. It's like, how many, which ways can you make zucchini?
I like zucchini again. Oh, no. Zucchini again. So.
All right. Let's pause because we have shot our wad for time limits on part one. We hope you don't mind the digressions. We find them fun and some of you find them informative. Let's get back to questions in part two. What are we going to address?
I read this from Consumer Lab. High doses of vitamin D may lead to bone mineral density loss in women.
Consumer Labs. Vitamin D is bad for you.
Yeah.
We'll break that down for you in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Today with Layla, it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we'll be back with more of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast.